Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 30 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode of Game On,
Hammer Time.
We take a look at two board games that are set in the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K universe.
Chaos in the Old World and Space Hulk.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana.
Home of the undefeated Indianapolis Colts. We're 5-0 heading into the bye week here.
That's right, just beat the dreaded Tennessee Titans. Well, they're not so dreaded this year.
0-5.
0-5.
But thanks for playing.
Hey, they might even bring in Vince Young. Because, hey, what have they got to lose?
Yeah, and he went to a pretty crappy school, too, right?
No comment.
Okay.
He went to a fine school, the University of Texas.
At Austin,
that's right. But, you know, sports, as you know from being faithful Game On listeners, we talk a little bit about sports for about 30 seconds
sure.
at the beginning of the podcast, and now on to gaming goodness.
Right.
So we got a lot to talk about on this episode.
It's a double-decker.
A double-decker, but first of all, you know, it's
Sorry,
episode 30.
I know, right?
What does that mean? Does it signify anything?
We're getting older.
We're getting older.
I guess.
I think that's all I can say about it. Is that
I'm not 30 yet. You've passed that milestone, so you'll have to let me know how that
see,
is.
See, when I hit 30, everything started to hurt a little more and get a little bit more creaky. Hopefully that won't happen with Game On with Cody and John.
Hopefully.
But as Cody mentioned, we've got a big double-decker episode, a little sort of a special episode where we're not going to stick with our normal big deal and buy, try, or deny format. We're going to lump it all together and talk about, we're going to have a little bit of Hammer Time.
Absolutely.
And talk about a couple of games that are in the Warhammer universe.
Right. We're going to talk about Chaos in the Old World, which is set in the Warhammer fantasy universe. And then we're not content with that. We're going to follow that up with Space Hulk. Third edition, which is set in the Warhammer 40K universe.
Right, we're going to travel 40,000 years into the future, and where there is only war.
There's still only war.
Hanging
not
out
even bakeries or grocery stores, but
no.
Just war.
But so that's going to be two big, extra large reviews for you, and of course we'll always have the Game On Inbox, which starts
now. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. Well, it is the Game On Inbox, and as always, we're going to start by giving our due diligence to the man. That is Dan the Man of Myriad Games.
That's right, and Myriad Games is our wonderful sponsor, and they sponsor us on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you've got a friendly professional game store where you are, we'd encourage you to go and check it out and to support that wherever you live. And if not, hey, check out MyriadGames.com. In addition to being a great friendly professional game store online and in their location in Salem, New Hampshire.
Live free or die.
That's right. Six Semper Tyrant.
No, that's Virginia.
That's Virginia, sorry. They also have a great series of podcasts called Myriad Games Presentations, which we'd encourage you to check out. They do kind of similar stuff to what we do. They do game reviews. And one of the things they've released recently are some Session Impressions podcasts on the games Middle-Earth Quest and Last Night on Earth. Last Night on Earth, I believe, made it onto one of our top 11 lists, and it wasn't mine.
It made it onto the better of the two lists, which would be mine.
Okay.
And it is a great game. I'm looking forward to playing it some more here in this spooky season coming up.
That's right. So it's a real timely review. So definitely go check out those Myriad Games presentations. And hey, here's a little bit more from Myriad Games.
Greetings from Myriad Games, your friendly professional game store. Myriad Games presentations feature a wide variety of family fun for everyone. Check out our summer convention coverage from Origins and Gen Con, including interviews with publishers, designers, and industry insiders. Myriad Games presentations are available through iTunes and the show links at MyriadGames.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes to receive your complimentary pair of Myriad dice and to be entered in drawings for free Myriad gear and $100 of Myriad money. Your feedback is very important to us. Please email us through MyriadGames.com with your comments, questions, suggestions, abuse, and general ridicule. For more about a myriad of games, visit your friendly professional game store. be sure to visit us online at myriadgames.com. Myriad Games. So many games, so little time. So start playing.
Well, thanks, Dan, for that spot.
It's a wonderful spot, wasn't it?
It is.
I love
fantastic.
Listening to it every time. His lilting voice, it just sings to my soul.
Oh, but something that may also sing to your soul is someone else on the Pulp Gamer Media Network, and that is Pulp Gamer Out of Character.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, Pulp Gamer Out of Character is actually kind of run by who we like to call the podfather of the Pulp Gamer Media Network, Don Dem, who is the founder of our feast and kind of the leader of our merry band of podcasters. But
wow, really?
he's got a great show. There's up to like 19 people on the show now. I mean, I don't know where the guy gets so many microphones.
I'm about
from.
To move to Arizona and jump in.
Apparently Tucson is the place to be for Mecca for gaming, right, Don?
Yeah.
Whatever. but the Pulp Gamer Out of Character, in addition to being a great podcast, has a great promotion going on right now that we want you to get in on.
This is cool. This is cool.
It's a neat idea. Now, one thing that the Pulp Gamer Network has kind of helped to produce are some guides to how to improve your accent if you happen to be in a role-playing game or some kind of a storytelling environment or something where you really need some sort of a British accent or something from the UK.
Hello.
Yeah, not like that.
Oh, blimey, governor.
So they've helped to produce four different training guides, I guess you would want to call it, called Accent Your Character. And it's dialect training for role players, cosplayers, and other casual pretenders, they say. and so they have four different ones to choose from: the Queen's English, Cockney, Irish, and Scottish. And so these are great to pick up on their own, but you can always get those from Pulp Gamer's website. But this is the special promotion for Pulp Gamer Out of Character. If you go to iTunes and leave a review on iTunes for Pulp Gamer Out of Character, and then go and email Pulp Gamer, which is pulpgamer@pulpgamer.com.
Pretty easy.
Yep. And tell them that you sent that you left them a review. They will send you, free of charge, the Accent Your Character presentation of your choice.
Great deal.
So any one of those you want. Now, it gets even better than that.
No.
It does. If you review any other, in addition to that, if you review any other podcast that's on the Pulp Gamer Media Network,
such as Game On with Cody and John,
or perhaps even like Myriad Games Presentations or Fear the Boot, the D6 Generation, The Game's the Thing, you know, any other great podcasts that are on our network, then you can get another one for free. So you can get up to two of these, no charge to you whatsoever. It'll be a digital file that's sent to you from Pulp Gamer there. So I think this is a great idea, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can pick up the Cockney one, and you can sound like all the poor French people in Les Mis, you know? Because, you know, they're in France, but they all sound like they're poor Cockney
people. It's like the Jean-Luc Picard rule, where he was French, but he had a British accent. Yeah. And all of his family had a British accent, too. I don't know.
But I may use this, because, you know, whenever I run D&D, all it seems like all the innkeepers all over the world all talk like this. Oh, you want a pint of your
Right.
It's like they all came from the same family. That's so right. I'm going to use this. I can't enter this, though, can I?
No. But those are available to you at pulpgamer.com.
Well, I may check it out.
Go check them out. So this promotion is going to go from now until the end of this year, the end of 2009. So if you leave a review, be sure to email pulpgamer@pulpgamer.com and let them know you left the review and which one of these Accent Your Character presentations you would like. And hey, while we're talking about Out of Character, you know, let's go ahead and hear just a little bit more about them.
Hello, I'm Don Dem.
I'm Derek Rex.
And I'm Jeremiah Lynch.
Every once in a while, we like to let down our hair and go out of character to talk to you, respond to your feedback, and talk about some things we're finding notable about our world.
The world we live in is one of board games, card games, and role-playing games.
We produce several podcasts on such topics, but this is the one that allows us to get open up and freestyle a little bit.
It gets a little crazy sometimes, but we mostly stay on topic.
Come join us at PulpGamer.com. That's P-U-L-P gamer.com. And look for the Out of Character podcast.
Don't forget your dice.
PulpGamer.com.
All right. So as we said, check out that podcast and a lot of other great ones at pulpgamer.com. All right. Enough of that.
End of commercials.
End of commercials. Okay. Now into the meaty part of the game on Inbox, and that's games we've been playing.
Absolutely.
So, Cody, what have you been playing lately?
My fourth edition game. We're back to going weekly now that I've come back from the wedding, the honeymoon, and all that. And,
weekly?
Yeah.
That's quite a commitment.
Every Friday night.
No,
I mean,
it's good.
We're all used to it. It's
yeah,
fun.
Awesome.
We've been keeping that up, and 4E is still going strong. It's like now that we've played it and people are getting into it, they just love it more and more. So.
Where are you on the scale now? Because you've gone back and forth.
I know.
You're liking it. Where are you right now? Where do you swing?
I'm still at about the same place. Like it's a good system. I like it. I like other systems as well. It's just kind of it's taken me a while to warm up that this is the new version of D&D because it's so different. But it's easy to run, and it's actually a lot of fun. So. I'm pretty warm to it right now. I can definitely run a long campaign of it and be happy with it.
Kaylin has her Pathfinder campaign coming up sometime in the future, right?
Yeah, sometime.
Okay. Well, sign me up.
Okay.
All right, what else?
I taught one of my gaming buddies Dominion.
Excellent game. Number one on the John Top 11.
Well, you know, number four on mine.
Okay.
But easy, buddy. I taught him that, and he seemed to like it. I found out Kaylin doesn't like Dominion quite as much as I thought.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. The one thing you can say about Dominion is that the player interaction's not the best. So if that's a real big deal to you, it's really not to me.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that can be a quibble. But no matter. And then she and I. Grammar, right?
Grammar on.
Mm-hmm. We played Martian Flux. We just kept killing some time, and nobody won because I played the ungoal because she was dangerously close to winning, I thought. So
this game has an ungoal?
Yeah, the ungoal where nobody won.
Oh, nice.
So the conditions were met and nobody won.
Okay, one of the fine games in the Flux pantheon now, right?
Yeah, I still like I like them all. I like the original the best.
Okay.
I still like Cookies and Milk and Death and Taxes and
Peace
all that.
And Love.
Peace and Love.
All those things. Okay.
So, John, what have you been playing?
Well, you know, I actually haven't had an opportunity to play that many games in the last couple of weeks. I've done gaming things, but mm-hmm. I haven't played too many games. But I did get a chance to play a game with my kids, and I will admit that I am a little bit of a sucker sometimes for those deal-a-day websites like Tanga and Woot. Yeah, and Woot especially, you know, they're a site that does a lot of electronics, and I think I kind of a weird assortment of stuff, but it's a lot of electronic stuff. And then there's also shirt.woot.com, which is t-shirts. Yep. And then there's wine.woot, where you can in Indiana, you can't order wine and have it shipped to you. But
really?
Yeah, we're one of the states that's out for that.
Yeah, the great state of Indiana.
But they've just recently, in the last couple of months or so, started up kids.woot.com.
Uh-oh.
And this site has a whole bunch of a strange assortment of toys and you know, kids stuff. But they will occasionally have a game, and got a real good deal on the game Dicecapades. And the Dicecapades Kids version.
Ah,
got a real good
deal
for a bundle package for both of them there. And the Dicecapades adult version comes with like 133 dice.
Nice.
And they're all different kinds. And I haven't had a chance to crack it open yet, but if it plays like the kids game, I think I'm going to like it. So the kids version of Dicecapades comes with these big chunky plastic D6s. And there's four of them that have letters on them. Four have numbers. Four of them have pictures on them. And then you get this one that has one die that has six different colors on it. And it's basically a roll and move game, sort of. It really plays, I think, more like Cranium as far as the movement, in that whatever spot that you're on at the beginning of your turn, you'll do whatever activity is on that spot. And the little track on the board sort of weaves its way in a spiral through this board, and it goes into three different areas. And they've got names like Thinking Town and Action Land and stuff like that, but they're just cards that will cause you to have to do certain activities, and they all have to do with the dice. Like, it might be you roll a die, the color die, and it gives you a color, and you have to do like a Pictionary thing where you draw the picture that corresponds with that color and get everybody to guess. Or maybe there's an action where you have to take eight of the dice and stack them on top of each other in less than 30 seconds.
Nice.
And so there's all kinds of, a little bit of dexterity, a little bit of trivia, a little bit of artistic stuff, and it all has a lot to do with dice. And so for kids, I would say that are maybe like kindergarten up to about maybe third or fourth grade, I think this game is a really great game. My son really enjoyed it a lot. My daughter, who's three, she can't read and she doesn't really know her numbers or her letters real well, so that was a little bit more difficult for her, but it hit a really good sweet spot with Ethan. So I would recommend that one if you've got kids, and I'll probably come back in the next episode and tell you how the adult version of Dicecapades works. Well, the non-kid version. So I got to play that, and then in addition to the games we played that we'll be talking about later on, I am dabbling a little bit more in the miniatures wargaming and got my battle box, my battle group box for War Machine. And so I've begun the process of putting those together and painting them. And so I've now, as of today, got two heavy war jacks painted.
And they look good.
Thank you.
They look really good.
Got them up, you know, primed, painted, based. I even did the base with the, you know, the dip in the ballast and get the grass and all that kind of stuff. And I've been watching the P3, the Privateer Press. They came out with this DVD called Core Techniques that tells you how to prime, how to paint, how to assemble, all that kind of stuff. For a new guy like me, it's a really, really good tool, I think. And so anyway, I'll keep you guys posted. I'm going to try to maybe get some pictures up. Yeah. I don't have the cool iPhone like Cody does, but yeah. I'll try to get my camera out and post some pictures. But
very cool.
As soon as I get everything painted and put together, and I'll try to find an opponent and play a game. So there you go. That's what I've been playing.
Very good. We do have some listener feedback. We have a few emails we wanted to pull out and read here, and it appears we have some other listeners in the Southern Hemisphere there.
We do indeed.
The Southern Hemisphere, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
So Southern Hemisphere, yeah.
And there's Eastern good. Western.
Geography on.
Wow, okay.
Yep, we got an email. You know, you might remember that last episode we read some comments from Rick in Australia.
Yep.
Who was at least our first Australian listener who's written us.
Right.
And that has prompted another listener named Nathan Clark to write us and tell us another little interesting piece of information. He says, "Hi, John and Cody. I was inspired to write you after hearing Rick's comments from Australia on the Game On Inbox, on your Top 11 podcast show. You should know that we also enjoy listening to your show in New Zealand."
Oh, yeah.
Does it get any farther? It's like Antarctica is like the next place you can go that's farther away, right?
New Zealand's closer to us.
It is?
Yeah. I mean, if you go... It would be a shorter flight from Indianapolis to New Zealand than it would from Indianapolis to Australia, wouldn't it? Because you would go westward across the U.S., across the Pacific, and you'd hit New Zealand, because New Zealand is is east of Australia, right?
You've been watching lots of episodes of The Amazing Race.
Yeah, The Big Red Line. We'll check it later.
Anyway, he says that's
still far away.
To continue with the geography, listeners, you should know that we also enjoy listening to your show in New Zealand. New Zealand is a small country, 4 million population, southeast of Australia.
Oh, see?
Southeast,
but east still. I mean, you would hit New Zealand before you would hit Australia.
I'm getting on Google Maps tonight and figure it out. And it's home to some of the most enthusiastic board gamers in the world.
Oh, we should go there. Get the game on plane.
The game on jet. I thoroughly click that donation button, listeners. I thoroughly enjoyed your top 11 show and agree with Battlestar Galactica with expansion and Dominion as top picks.
Of course
he does.
Note the order.
Hey. I also enjoyed the new Games Cody Won't Play segment.
Me too.
I have to admit that some Euro games just don't work for me either. For example, I thought Agricola was just okay, not great.
Good man.
I agree totally with John's comments about Agricola being too finicky. Like fiddly, yeah, like, you know, yeah. Put all the pieces back and everything. However, I'm curious to try other Euro games like Power Grid and Stone Age. Good man.
Stone Age is fine.
Anyway, thanks for your podcast. I look forward to listening to future shows. Nathan Clark, Wellington, New Zealand.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you, Nathan. All right, so a little closer to home than New Zealand, we had an email from Ben in Brooklyn, New York.
New York, huh?
And what did Ben have to say?
He goes, "Yo, guy." No, I'm just
kidding. Hey, yo.
And he writes. He says, "Hi, guys. Just wanted to drop you both a quick line to let you know that I've really been enjoying your podcast."
Thank you.
"I discovered your podcast about a month ago after hearing a couple of episodes of The Game's the Thing."
On the Pulp Gamer Media Network.
You beat me to it. Great show. "And then checking out the other casts on the Pulp Media site. I love your format and approach and that Midwestern sense of humor, which is very different from the usual acerbic, condescending New York City wit that I've grown up around." We're folksy.
Midwestern sense of humor, huh?
Well, I was milking the cow the other day.
Well, you betcha, don't you know?
"I've really enjoyed hearing how you are beginning to dip your feet into the lunatic fringe of the gaming community, miniatures wargaming.
Dun, dun, dun.
My introduction into tabletop strategy game came through HeroScape." Yay. "My son and I enjoyed the game, but the time-consuming nature of setting up the gaming surface, as well as the limited nature of the troop choices led us to look for so-called greener pastures and eventually led us to the sinkhole that is known as Warhammer 40K.
The sinkhole. Very nice.
And he gives us a very... we don't have time to read the whole thing, but he gives us a very good overview on paints and other things to own as far as 40K is related.
Yeah, thanks for all that information.
And I have to say, I looked at 40K stuff, and it looked fun. It looked cool, but I'm like,
no.
I can't do it. And it's like, I will be out of money.
It's a downward spiral.
But he wraps up with saying that your podcast has me jotting lists of new games to look up on a regular basis, and I would also like to thank you for that. Anyway, enough of my yapping. Looking forward to your next episode, this episode, and review of Space Hulk.
Oh, that's a timely email, yeah.
Best regards, Benassaro, Brooklyn, New York. And he has some PSs here. The first one is, Cody, please don't dip your minis. It's unseemly.
Ooh.
Now, Kaylin and I painted this weekend, actually. We each painted a miniature just for our D&D session, and I don't think I'll dip. I like doing kind of the washing and the doing it myself. So
it looked good. The one you posted some pictures.
Yeah, it came out all right. Yeah. I do some things differently, but I'm learning. Kaylin's better than I am, but I think I'm into doing the washing and the highlighting all by hand. It's, okay. So I will not be a dipper. Fear not, Ben.
All right, no dipping.
And also, he says, I've recently come back to another passion of mine for my youth role playing. Woo! Which is another story in and of itself. But I am now running a homebrew Pathfinder campaign. Cool. As well as playing in a Star Wars Saga Edition campaign. Now, that is a good system.
Oh, yeah. You own that one, right?
I do. Mm. I do. It's a good system. I don't know if I'd ever play it, but it's a good system.
It's a pretty book.
Yeah, it's a pretty book. While I can see the appeal of 4th edition, I personally feel that the game has lost a lot of its integrity and taken on a lot of water. I can see that. I would enjoy hearing more about your role-playing exploits, too, even if you just recap where your players are in your current campaign, as it is often glossed over in your podcast. Well, because of that, I think starting next episode, we're going to do that.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Because
I worry I'm going to bore the majority of the listeners who are board gamers, and and
I think
dang it,
there's a little role player in everybody.
That's right.
We got to draw it out.
That's right. So
draw it out.
We may take those 5 minutes and I may talk about it. So
sounds great.
Thanks again, Ben. Good to see we have fans both near and far. And you'll have to come out to the Midwest. We'll bake you a pie and we'll show you how to milk a cow. And
you can eat some corn with
eat
us.
Some
or something.
Corn. It's very flat and cornfieldy here.
Yeah.
All right. We do have some gaming news here in the inbox. Looks like Fantasy Flight Games is going to be releasing miniatures for use with Arkham Horror.
Nice.
It says starting in January 2010, Fantasy Flight Games, rocks, will release plastic miniatures for its Arkham...
Our heroes.
Our heroes for its Arkham Horror board game. These pre-painted miniatures will be sold in packs of two for $13.
Wow. $6.50 per miniature?
That's high.
Yikes.
With a new pack being released each month. They do not, alas, have detachable skulls with an internal sanity meter.
Does that come with a syringe or something? With
it? Man,
some
I don't
kind
know.
Of drug in it?
I mean, what are they in the regular game? Are they just like cardboard?
Yeah, they're like stand-up cardboard tokens, aren't they? Yeah, they're like stand-up cardboard tokens on the
I don't
stands.
Know if that's worth it for me. That's...
$6.50 a miniature.
It's a bit much.
See, it's weird though, because then you start thinking about like the fact that I just spent $50 on 5 miniatures for War Machine that I have to put together and paint myself.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
yeah.
It's all what you're going for. They are pre-painted.
If you're a big Arkham Horror fan, I guess it's big. But I mean, if you just casually play it, yeah, you know.
Yeah. From what I hear with miniatures, the molds for plastic miniatures cost a lot more to produce than the ones for metal miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
But that once you make the mold, then it's real easy to crank out the figure. So maybe they're just trying to recoup the cost of the mold they had to make. I don't know. Just
well, guessing. If you like Arkham Horror, you you probably play it more than once a month. And this would be a good investment to pick up, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's see, on kind of the more the Eurogame front, I guess, in the end of this month, October 22nd through the 25th, is going to be the largest board game convention in the world, Essen Spiel 2009 in Germany.
Right.
We will not be there, unfortunately.
Thankfully.
I would. That's be a dream of mine to one day make it out to Essen.
I'd like to go to Germany, but I'll skip the gaming.
Okay, we'll make the game on trip out to Germany, and you can go and do German things while I play games.
Guten Tag.
But lots of great games get released at Essen every year, and so we kind of hear about it over on this side of the pond, a little bit of the inklings of what's going on. One thing that caught my eye was that Mayfair Games is going to be releasing an English language version of a sequel to the game The Pillars of the Earth.
Oh, thank goodness.
Which you would even admit that you liked that
game,
right?
Yeah, it was
right?
Fine, okay. But as I don't think it merited a sequel.
Well, but the game is based on the book, The Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett, and he wrote a sequel to his book called World Without End, and so they've now made a sequel to the board game, also called World Without End.
Which is what it'll seem like when you play it.
Nice. So the description I have here says that, kind of based upon Ken Follett's follow-up to Pillars of the Earth, World Without End, 200 years after the events surrounding the construction of the Cathedral of Kingsbridge, which you who have played Pillars of the Earth will remember that was kind of the turn counter in the game, was building that cathedral, and when the thing was finished, then the game was over.
Yep.
It says, the descendants of the characters from the Pillars of the Earth face new challenges. As a citizen of Kingsbridge, players have different areas of specialization: building, trade, piety, and nutrition and medical knowledge.
Eurogames!
Nutrition. Very nice. In each round, an event card is played, and victory points will be scored for the construction of buildings or the care of sick people. To expand on that description, players are going to need to ensure that they get enough food, that they have adequate income, and that they're going to be using their medical knowledge to fight off the Black Death.
Well, sure.
And so, you know, lots of other things going on in the game, but it's going to be for 2 to 4 players, ages 12 and up, plays in about, they say, 1.5 to 2 hours, with a price of $49. And it should hit the streets here and on November 23rd, 2009. And it sounds like if you happen to be going to Essen Spiel this year, that they'll probably have some copies available there. So be sure to check that one out if you're a Pillars of the Earth fan. I think I'll be picking that one up. And it looks like that might be featured on a future episode of Games Cody Won't Play.
Quite possibly. And if any of you Game On listeners are going to Essen Spiel, what does Essen mean?
Essen is a city in Essen Germany.
Essen is a city. So it's just...
it's in Essen, Germany.
So it's just city game. It's just Essen game.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or so, I think it's got a longer name like Spieltag, or I don't speak.
So if you're going to Essen Game, definitely shoot us an email at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And we'd actually really like to hear about it and what your plans are and what games you're going to be trying out.
Yep. All right, so that's board game news, I guess. Do we have any RPG news this
episode? Well, you threw me the bone, so I'll take it.
I'll pitch it to you.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast recently ran a 4-day trial of their DM hotline. And it was something where you could call this certain number between, it was like 2 and 6 p.m. Pacific.
I was going to say like 2 a.m. and 6 a.m.
Yeah, so it was, you know, like 5 to 9 our time.
Must call from basement.
Right.
I have a question.
And you could call and ask rules questions or setting questions or whatever and talk to one of the, air quote, expert Wizards of the Coast DMs.
Oh my gosh.
I called in and did it. I was
did
like,
you really?
Oh, absolutely I did. You know, I had a few questions. Fourth edition doesn't have that many fiddly bits. But...
well, what brand of potato chips would be appropriate for this campaign?
Oh, should I bring 2 cases of Mountain Dew? No. So I called in. And it was really well done. You know, the people really wanted to talk about the game, and it sounded like they were all in a bullpen because it was really kind of loud. You called in, like, it's the Wizards DM hotline, what can I do for you? Oh, yeah, you have a question about range? Yeah, let me talk to you about it. You know, line of sight, you know, blah, 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 blah.
But they were pretty enthusiastic.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. Wow. It's like, I would call in again.
Awesome.
Yeah, so.
Did it cost anything, or was it?
No, it was a toll-free 800 number.
Wow.
To beautiful Seattle, Washington.
Wow, very nice.
So there you go. So, check out wizards.com, and you can check the next time they run this DM hotline, because I think they'll do it again. If that's not the dorkiest thing in the world, I don't know what
it is. I think that probably is the dorkiest thing
in the
world. I
have a question about my Dungeons & Dragons game.
You should call for, like, dating advice. That would be great.
I want to talk to a girl.
All right, well, enough of that. I think that's about wraps up the Game On Inbox for this episode, and time to move on to the rest of the story and a little bit of Hammer Time.
Oh, boy.
Stop. Hammer Time.
Yes, friends, it is Hammer Time.
Okay.
Okay. And
I love the rap music.
What other podcast is going to use MC Hammer and talk about Chaos in the Old World?
I don't know.
But we're going to be featuring games that are set in the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K universe.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest regrets as a gamer, mainly an RPG. My group never did anything Warhammer related.
Oh,
like,
really?
None of us played the minis game. None of us played Warhammer Fantasy Battles or anything 40K. It's something that we didn't mean to avoid, but we always avoided. So it was kind of nice playing these two games that were set in the universe.
Well,
I really like it, too.
The Warhammer miniatures game, it's always that area of the game store for me, up until recently, where I almost didn't even want to go look at the boxes. You know, it's like, because everything was expensive and very foreign to me. So we've now opened the door. We've cracked the door to the Warhammer world. And, you know, some of you listeners may really be into Warhammer already and know all that we're going to be talking about. But for us, you know, common gamers, experiencing new horizons, and we just want to share that with you. So I'm going to just start off with a little background on the Warhammer setting.
A primer, if you will.
A primer. The Warhammer setting came out in the early 1980s by Games Workshop. And it was developed with a lot of similarities to the sort of the Tolkien fantasy universe.
Can I stop you for just a second?
Go ahead.
I was, for some reason, I was doing some I was doing research on old games, because there's a thread in the on the guild talking about RPGs, and a lot of people mentioned Top Secret, this old like espionage game. But my point is, at one point, TSR and Games Workshop came very close to merging.
Really?
Like really, really close. Like, they just couldn't hammer out the final details. And you have to wonder what would have happened.
That could have changed everything.
That could have changed the whole thing.
Wow.
Continue.
Okay, so Warhammer Fantasy Battles is the miniatures game that, you know, sort of set in this Warhammer Fantasy world. A lot of the races in the game are similar to races that you'd find in the Lord of the Rings, or also in Dungeons and Dragons. You have mankind, you have humans, you have elves. There's several different kinds of elves, including the high, the dark, and the wood elves. You have dwarfs. You also have lizard men, which is not really dissimilar from Dungeons and Dragons. But you also have orcs and goblins, and there's also this thread running through the Warhammer world, this idea of chaos. And that there's influence of these chaos gods and ruinous powers that are threatening to corrupt things. And so this idea of corruption and chaos sort of runs through. And not even so much that it's bad versus good, as it's sort of almost good versus the bad from within. So it's like, you know, man versus himself. That there, not only is there external corruption, but there's corruption coming up from within that's threatening to overtake things. So it makes it kind of a...
That's deep, man.
Thank you very much. It's very philosophical. But it makes it kind of a grim, a lot darker sort of setting than maybe a Dungeons & Dragons setting. They take a lot of elements from Gothic art. And there's also like a prominence of skulls in a lot of the artwork that you see for Warhammer. So, you know, these chaos gods are, you know, will play into the equation kind of in the same way like the ancient old ones in Lovecraft, like Cthulhu and stuff. You know, they're kind of laying under the surface and are, you know, finding ways to corrupt people. And so the game Chaos in the Old World is a board game that is set in this Warhammer fantasy world that really keys in on these chaos gods. So in this game, you're going to be playing one of these four ruinous powers, these chaos gods.
There are no good guys.
There's four bad guys and no good guys in this game. And I guess the good guys are the people in the game that are trying to fight against you and will fail.
That you'll mercilessly slaughter.
Exactly. So for the uninitiated, here is a little background on those four chaos gods. You have Khorne.
King Khorne.
King Khorne, the blood god, the skull taker. Lusts for death and battle, taking delight in fury and slaughter, rage and butchery.
Also boating.
Oh, he also enjoys a little bit of yachting, yeah. Then you have Nurgle, the plague lord, the father of corruption, luxuriates in filth and disease, spreading a tide of, get this, pus and pestilence across the land.
Also a good cook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Enjoys a good Bernaise sauce.
Indeed.
Careful, that might be pus. then you have Tzeentch, the changer of ways, the great conspirator, is the architect of the fate of the universe, weaving strands of confusion and manipulation as slippery as silk.
Nice. Also does community theater.
Oh, very nice. That local production of Rent.
Yes.
Then you have Slaanesh, the prince of pleasure and pain, the lord of temptations, lures even the most steadfast to seductions of avidity, gluttony, carnality, paramountcy. I think that's a made-up word, actually.
Wow.
Vainglory and indolency.
Wow. Also runs a Pilates group for his neighborhood.
Oh, good. And spinning class, too?
Spinning class. Big hit. Big hit.
So there's your four ruinous powers, and as the rule book says here, but even as those four powers play their great game forever and for all time, the old world itself resists their ravages and depredations with staunch resolve and mighty heroes. Not that mighty, though, because pretty much the ruinous powers rock this game.
Yeah.
All right, so the idea is that you can almost sort of think about it as these four chaos gods sitting over this table, and, you know, they're kind of playing this game to try to, you know, take over and ruin parts of the world. And to that end, the board itself is actually kind of gross, I would say.
Yeah, a little graphic.
Because the map of the board is stretched human skin on, like, meat hooks with a bunch of blood.
Yeah.
It's kind of icky, but, you know, very thematic.
Kind of icky.
A little icky, but very, very thematic. And so in the game, you know, each player is going to take one of these roles, and you're trying to corrupt, dominate, and basically destroy the old world. And there are several different ways that each Chaos God can do that. And one of the features of this game is that the Chaos Gods each have different paths to victory and different ways that they can do their corruption based upon their characteristics. So in that way, it's a very thematic game. At its core, it does have a victory point element to it, which, what did you call the victory points in this? Corruption, action, dominance points.
Yeah, yeah. They can never just be victory points. No, that's Euro-ish.
Exactly. So there's a Euro, there's a victory point element to the game where you can win if you have a certain number of victory points. But then there's also an interesting mechanic where the board has on it four of these little dials. Now, if you've ever played Battlestar Galactica, it's a similar sort of mechanism as far as how the dials go. They're attached to the board and they spin around. And there's a little window that shows you, you know, where you are on your dial. So each god is going to have a different dial. And based upon certain conditions in the game, and if you achieve certain goals, you're going to be able to move that little dial a certain number of spaces, which will give you stuff. You read in the window what stuff it gives you. And then eventually, if you get it far enough, you could win the game by getting your dial all the way to the end of your goal there. So that's another way that you can win. But there's also kind of a timer mechanism in this game, and it's called the Old World deck of cards. And you have a certain number of cards in the deck. And if that deck runs out during the game, then none of the Chaos Gods win.
Yay!
And apparently the Old World has fought back the evil powers.
Good for it.
Yeah, good for that Old World. Way to go, guys. So other components that you're going to get in the game is you're going to get, in addition to the game board, a bunch of power sheets, which are sort of like player sheets, one for each god. Each god has its own color, so it's very very nicely colorful. The artwork in this game, I think, is really well done.
Top notch.
Korn is red, Tzeentch is blue, Slaanesh is purple, and Nurgle is green. And there's also like a symbol that goes along with each one. So all of their tokens are going to be that symbol and that particular color. So you get a bunch, I mean, just a boatload of cardboard tokens for various things in the game. One, probably the biggest number of tokens are going to be these corruption tokens, which you'll be using at certain points to corrupt areas on the board. Talk about that a little more in a second. But each player is going to have a certain number of those. Tons of cards. You're going to have a little chaos deck that's going to be just for your god that you're going to be able to use to affect things on the board. That's going to be a part of the game as well. You get 5 dice.
Nice.
These are kind of cool dice because they're sort of an off-white color, but they almost look like they're stained in blood. So, yeah real
it's
nice.
Cute.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's kind of a game for the preschool set.
That's right.
Yeah. Nah, probably not. And then you're also going to get these really nice plastic miniatures. And as Fantasy Flight is wont to do, they have really gone out of their way to make some really nice miniatures here. Yeah. One downside of the miniatures, I would say, is that they're kind of bendy. They're that bendy sort of plastic. And so just from having been in the box and shipping and all that kind of stuff, I found that some of mine were a little bit bent.
Well, you can do the hot water technique.
Oh, yeah. The I think I... Yeah, where you like... What is it?
You get really hot water. You put the mini underneath it. You get it good and hot, and then you just kind of shape it how you want, and then you dunk it in ice cold water.
Oh, okay.
And you hold the shape you want it to be
kind
in.
Like a blacksmithing technique.
Yeah. Oh, it's pretty much what it is, but it's worked for me at least with Fantasy Flight stuff.
Okay.
Because I'm painting my talisman set now as an aside.
Oh. Okay.
So on some of the bendy windy things there, I've been shaping it to my will.
Okay, all right. Well, that's not such a big deal then. But each of the Chaos Gods is going to have a certain set of followers. You'll have cultists, warriors, and greater demons. Actually, yeah, each god will have one greater demon. And it depends on the god that you have as to what the numbers of these are going to be. It's different for each one. So, again, I'm going to say this probably 4 or 5 more times, but it's very thematic and very individual. The Chaos Gods are very different in the way that they're played.
Yep.
And so their pieces and their tokens are going to be respective of their particular characteristics. So, you know, when you set up the game here, you're going to, one of the interesting things is that the seating in the game is very much based upon who is playing which god. And actually the turn order is always going to be Korn, Nurgle, Tzeentch, Slaanesh. So you want to sort of situate your people around the board, in order to do that. So lots of things to set up. There's, you know, tokens and cards and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you can read the rule book to figure out how that goes. And then the game turn itself is going to be in a sequence of 6 phases. And the first thing that you're going to do is what's called the Old World phase, where you draw one of these Old World cards. Now, there's a place on the board where these cards go, and it has a mechanic that I think sort of resembles Dracula's trail on in Fury of Dracula. In that there's two spaces for cards, and so you'll turn over one and apply the effect of this card. And this these cards represent kind of what the Old World is doing to help to fight back the evil forces of the Chaos Gods. And so you might be placing tokens on the board, or you might be having some sort of standing effect. So that card will go down. And then the next turn, when the next card is drawn during this phase, the first card will slide down to the second spot, and then that card will go into the first spot. Then when you get to the third turn, that one that's on that was the first one drawn will kind of fall off of the track, and then its effect won't be applied anymore. So you'll have these two cards in play pretty much at all times. So you're going to do that first, and then you're going to have a draw phase where the players are going to each draw chaos cards. So you're going to start off with a certain number of these little small chaos cards. And they're different effects, and they're very specific to the gods that you have there. And you're going to draw based upon what your player mat says. These player mats are actually pretty important because they give some specifics on what each god can do. So you'll draw up to the appropriate number of chaos cards. And then phase three is the summoning phase. And this is where you're going to be taking and placing cards onto the board. And then you're also going to be placing your miniatures for your cultists and your warriors and your greater demons onto the board. Now, the board is divided up into nine regions, and each region is going to have a space where two of these chaos cards can be played. So these are standing effects, and they're going to affect things during that round of play. And so it's a bit of a cat-and-mouse strategic play of these. So you're going to go in order, and you're going to start with Khorne, and he will be able to either place a card or place one of his figures. And so in order to place a figure, all you have to do is pay the cost of that figure. So the currency in this game is something that's called power. And each god is going to get a certain number of power points at the beginning of the turn. Your player mat is going to have a little spot, a little track that shows how many points you have. And then you'll have a little token that goes there to keep track of that. And so most of the players get 6 points. And I think that Khorne gets 7 to start off with.
Yeah,
because Khorne is cool. And so then you're going to spend those points. So it might cost one power point to summon a cultist. And so you're just going to spend that point, and then you'll place your cultist into one of the areas on the board. It's just that simple. Once you've done, if you want to place a card, then you're going to pay the cost of that card and then lay it down onto the board in a certain space. So each of the nine regions in the game has two spaces for cards. And so you'll just lay it down there in one of those spaces, and then it'll move to the next player. And so the next player is going to look and see what that person has done, and you know, and might want to play a card in the same spot. And there's a lot of interaction between these cards. There's a lot of interaction between the figures. So it's real strategic as to what you want to do. But what you're doing could be very different. For example, the player who plays Khorne is very interested in killing. He's the blood god. And so you're going to get some special bonuses if you kill stuff. We mentioned earlier those dials. You're going to be able to advance your dial if you kill stuff during your turn. But that's just for Khorne. Only Khorne can do that. So some of the other players are going to have different conditions for that. So for example, Nurgle is going to be able to possibly move his dial each time that he places corruption tokens into a populous region. So we'll talk about corruption tokens in a second, but that has nothing to do with killing. So, you know, if Nurgle kills stuff, that's great and everything, but it might not be as beneficial to him. So lots of different ways to advance in this game. So you're going to go around the table, and each person is going to be spending their action points or their power points, and putting these cards down, and putting the cultists down, and putting the greater demons down, all that kind of stuff. You'll basically go around until everybody's out of power points. And that'll be the end of the summoning phase. Then you're going to move on to the battle phase.
Yay.
And where you're going to look at the different regions and see what figures are in there. And then you're going to perform some combat steps with your dice. So the board is divided up, like I said, in these nine regions. And not only is it nine regions, they're actually in a particular order. Mm-hmm. And there's arrows that point in sort of a pathway to start at one side of the board. And it goes through in an order to get through all the nine of these regions. So you're going to go in that order to resolve all of your combat. And you're just going to look and see who has figures in there. And then you'll do some dice resolution in order to figure out who gets killed. I could go through the details of all that, but it's a real simple mechanic. And so you're going to roll your dice, do your combat, and take your figures off.
It's pretty streamlined.
Yeah.
You're not going to be fighting for a while.
Nope. Real quick. It's after the battle phase, then you're going to have this corruption phase, phase 5. And you're going to be calculating dominance or domination. And in each of these regions, you'll start over in this order that I mentioned before. You're going to take the absolute number of figures that a person has, and you're going to add to that the power cost of all the cards that they have in that region. So if you played a card that costs 3 and you've got 4 figures in the region, that's a number of 7. So it's really
easy. Good job.
Thank you very much. Real easy to figure that kind of out. So you're going to figure out the domination value for each of the players that are in there. Now, whoever has the highest domination value, then you're going to take and compare that to a resistance value that is on each of the regions. And so if the player has the highest domination value has a value that's higher than the resistance value, then you're going to get a certain number of victory points. And you'll get that the victory points are equal to the resistance number. That's still also called the conquest number. It's the same number. There are cards that modify that and will make one or both of those numbers, resistance and conquest, higher or lower. But you're going to get that number of victory points. And so that's how you do that corruption phase. And then you're going to be able to place corruption tokens into the regions wherever you have cultists. So those cultists in the game, they're not very powerful as far as combat goes, but it's important to have them in the regions because that's how you get the corruption tokens piled on. So why would you want corruption tokens on there?
Why would you want corruption tokens? I can't even say. Why would you want corruption tokens on there?
Nice cue there. All right. Well, I'm glad you asked that.
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
I'm glad you asked that. The reason why you want to place corruption is because after a certain number of corruption tokens have been placed onto a region, I believe the number is 12, then that region is considered to be ruined.
Oh.
And ruining a region will allow you to get victory points based upon how much you've contributed to the ruination. And so there's a card that will tell you, once you've ruined a region, you're going to place this card over top of the area where the chaos cards would go to show that you can't really do anything in that region anymore because it's pretty messed up. It's ruined. And then you're going to get points based upon who has the most corruption tokens in there, and then who has the second most corruption tokens that were involved, and then anybody who had at least one corruption token is going to get another number of points.
Participant ribbon.
Exactly. So you want to get involved with that corruption, when something is about to be ruined, because you're going to get points for that. And again, victory points is one way that you're going to win the game. So that's going to be the corruption phase. You do that domination thing to get victory points, and then you're going to go through and place your corruption tokens based upon the cultists. The end phase in the game is basically a big bookkeeping thing where you're going to take all the chaos cards that were on the board and remove them. You're going to resolve any of those old world cards that have an end phase condition. There's some other tokens that you might need to resolve. You're going to score those ruined regions at that point, and then you're going to advance your threat dials. Now, these threat dials that are on the board there, I mentioned before that you're going to get the possibility of moving those dials if you do certain things during the game. So, for example, Korn, if he kills somebody, might move his dial. Now, the reason why I say might is because if he kills somebody, he's going to get to put a threat dial token onto his threat dial. So we'll put that token in there to mark to say, hey, I completed that condition. Or whenever whenever Nurgle places a corruption token into a region that's populous, then he's going to get a threat dial as well. So after all those threat dials, threat tokens have been thrown onto the threat dials, at the very end here, you're going to see who has the most tokens on their dial. That person is going to be able to move their dial 2 spaces. Everyone else who has at least 1 token on there will be able to move it 1 space. And as you move these things, you're going to look in the window and see what you might be able to do. You might be able to upgrade some stuff on your player mat and your characters. You might get victory points. There's lots of things that you might see on the dial. But that's going to be how you advance those threat dials at the end of the turn. After that, you're going to reset and do this all again. And you're going to continue on until at least 5 regions are ruined, at which point whoever has the most victory points after 5 regions are ruined will win the game. You're going to check at the end to see if anybody has achieved 50 victory points. If someone's achieved 50 victory points, then whoever has the most victory points is the winner, because you might have more than one person right at the end of a turn who does that. You're also going to see if that deck of cards has run out, and if it has, then everybody loses the game.
Yeah.
And so you're going to check those end phase conditions, and then you're going to go again. So that is the basic rule set of Chaos in the Old World. So there's kind of a lot going on, and there's a lot that's on the cards, but the gameplay itself really is quite simple, I think.
Yeah.
And the player mats, especially, that give you the round sequence and things like that, are very well done, and you can really understand what's going on in the game. And so we played a three-player game of this,
mm-hmm.
and with Cody and Kalen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Cody, give me your impressions on Chaos in the Old World.
At first blush, you look at this, and it looks like kind of a standard Fantasy Flight, Ameritrash, gung-ho game.
Yeah.
But in playing it, I think there's a lot of Euro elements in there.
Uh-oh.
It's still at its heart, yeah, it's an Ameritrash game, but there's a lot of kind of this, area control and resource control and you're not placing workers, you're placing cultists, but there's a lot of that in there. So I think this is kind of a good compromise for people. It's not just a buckets of dice Ameritrash game, nor is it a no chance at all, just everything's placement, very, solitaire game. It's a good mix, but it surprised me that it wasn't just a straight kind of a bloodbath of a game, Ameritrash style. It was a very blended experience that I think a lot of people would like.
Just looking at the artwork on the game and the fact that it's linked to Warhammer, you would think that it would be just real dicey. And that would be the main thing, and that combat would be the main issue in the game. Yep. But that is really not the case at all.
Yeah, dice and combat take kind of a back seat to everything else in this.
Yep, and so there's just a lot of strategy involved. And because there's a lot of different paths to victory, I think that you can sort of, Euro sort of way, decide from the beginning what you want your path to victory to be, mm-hmm. and kind of see how that works out. One of the things I really do like about the game is that, as I've said, like I said five or six times before, each of the characters in the game is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you play this game multiple times and you play Khorne one time and then you play Tzeentch the next time, it's going to be a different play experience completely. Matter of fact, in the back of the rule book, they even have a whole section that's gives you, it's like a player guide where it says playing Khorne, playing Nurgle, and it gives you whole strategy tips on that, and you would not find that in a normal, Ameritrash dice fest of a game. So don't be fooled by the bloody map.
Yeah.
This game really has a lot of Euro elements to it, and I totally agree with that. So Cody.
Hi there.
Chaos in the Old World, buy, try, or deny?
This one's going to be a solid try for me. I think it has a lot of good elements. The theme may be a little off-putting. It's like, I kind of like dark fantasy, but even this was a little, I don't know. The theme actually kind of took me out of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact it has some Euro elements I don't necessarily like. It does have some good Ameritrash elements in there. This one's a solid try. If you're a Warhammer fan, I think it starts to inch over into the buy, because it really is it's a well-done game. It's just, for me, it was okay. If using the Jones theory, would this go in the library? Maybe not, but I could see how someone could really like this game. So if I can't sit on the fence any more than that, it's got some good elements. Maybe not for me, but I give it a solid try.
Okay.
Now, John,
yeah.
Chaos in the Old World, buy, try, or deny?
This one is also going to be a solid try, although I will say that if you are a fan of Warhammer Fantasy Battles and you've played Warhammer for years and you're very familiar with the world and with these chaos gods, I think it's a solid solid buy, actually. Mm-hmm. And because I'm not, I think, like you said, the theme took me out of the game. I could see what was going on and how the text made sense with the understanding that I had of the characters, but I just didn't have any emotional involvement in it at all. I mean, for me, it could have been completely rethemed to something else, World War II or whatever. And,
right.
And I would have probably enjoyed it more, I guess, because this theme just didn't ring with me at all. It's cool. I mean, it's a really cool game. And the way the theme is integrated with the gameplay is very, very, mm-hmm. very well done.
Yeah.
It's not a theme that has interested me or that I'm that involved in. But if you're a Warhammer fan, I would say this is a buy, absolutely.
Yeah, there's some good things going on here. Okay, so it's two tries from us, but we really think one of you listeners out there may get something more out of this game. So we are going to give this game away.
That's right. And we've only played it once.
Once. That's right.
I took meticulous care of all the components. I put them all into very nice bags. Everything is beautiful.
It is a great game, and one of you is going to win it, but we're going to put our own little chaos spin on it, as John's going to get the official Game On D20.
Yeah, hold on, let me just get it
from its perch. It is a giant inflatable D20.
Oh my gosh.
There it is.
Oh.
Pass it over to me.
Yep. Oh, okay. Good catch.
So I've got the giant D20 in my hand, and it just feels good to have it's dice nice. In the hand. Yeah. And we are going to roll a number.
Between 1 and 20, between because that's what the D20 will yield.
That's right. And then all you have to do to enter is, why don't you tell them while I prep the dice?
Okay, so to make this as chaotic as possible, we're going to ask you just to email us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep, and all you have to do is put in the subject line the word chaos.
Chaos.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to roll this D20 here, and it's going to come up with a number. And we're going to say that whatever number comes up, that email that we get chronologically will be the winner.
So if we roll the number 5 and you're the 5th email we get, you've just won a copy of Chaos in the Old World.
There you go. It's going to be just that simple. I mean, we thought about doing like the thing we did with Battlestar Galactica where we have people write in and say why they deserve the game, but that's just not chaotic enough.
No. So I have the die ready. Are we ready to roll it?
Roll it.
Chaos.
That's not real impressive because it makes it kind of a wet thud on the floor. All right, and what does that beautiful, big, chunky, inflatable die say?
It is number 9.
9, okay. So that, you know, that was just the luck of the die there. It could have been a 1, it could have been a 20.
That's right.
But it was a 9.
So if you are the 9th emailer to the Game On Inbox,
then you could be the winner.
That's right.
And so, you know, we would say, I know a lot of you guys, you might download this episode right when it comes out, and then you might wait a few days or whatever. So if you're just now listening to this and it's 4 or 5 days afterwards, email now,
you never know.
We have had contests that have had, dozens of entrants, and then we've had contests where we've had like 3 or 4 entrants. Yeah. So, you know, this is a nice quality big box game from Fantasy Flight. We would love to give it away to you, the 9th emailer.
Very good.
All right, so that wraps up our look at Chaos in the Old World from the Warhammer Fantasy universe. And so what are we going to do now?
We're going to jump into the 41st millennium. We're going to just take a little step forward and go into Space Hulk.
All right, so we've now traveled 40,000 years into the future of now, into the 41st millennium, and the world of Warhammer 40,000 or 40K.
There is only war.
In the grim, what is it again? In the grim
darkness of the far future, there's only war.
There's only war, yeah. You know, I actually saw a retouching of that main Warhammer 40K picture that you see like on the early rule books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got Hello Kitty.
Oh no.
It says Hello Kitty 40,000. In the grim far future of Hello Kitty, there's only war. But there's a girl I work with who's big into Hello Kitty, so I thought that was funny.
So Space Hulk.
Cody apparently does not think that's funny, and I'm sure your listeners don't either. So we'll move right on into Warhammer 40K. So this was developed a little bit later. The original rule book for Warhammer 40K came out later in the 80s, I think in 87, something like that.
That was 4.
Yeah, and that was originally called Rogue Trader, was the first rule book. Was called
Oh, no
Rogue
joke.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so now they're all the way up to the 5th edition of Warhammer 40K, and it is also a tabletop miniatures game, just like Warhammer Fantasy Battles, a little bit different, definitely a different theme, and a little bit different rule set, I think. And so the setting kind of jumps ahead to the 41st millennium now, and mankind is now referred to as the Imperium of Man.
That's an upgrade.
Yeah, and it's ruled by the Emperor of Mankind. And there's a whole bunch of backstory that goes along with, like, there's the Emperor, and he gets in this fight with this bad guy named Horus, and he gets mortally wounded, and so now he's this sort of withered half-creature being thing that's been alive, you know, kind of supported and made alive by on this throne for thousands of years, and he's telepathically controlling, you know, benevolently everything that's going on in the Imperium. So
cool.
Kind of neat.
Good for him.
Yeah. And so there's all this war going on against all these different species and races, and a lot of the races that were in the fantasy realm are represented here, but they have some different names. So instead of the orcs, O-R-C-S, you have the orcs, O-R-K-S.
They advance down the alphabet.
And then you have the elves, which are now called the Eldar. And you also have some new races, such as the Tau and the Tyranids. and lots of other stuff too. So same ideas here with the Chaos Gods. They still are present in this game. And so there's this constant war going on between all these races, and makes for some really exciting, you know, tabletop battles, I guess. And one of the prominent elements of the race of mankind are these things known as the Space Marines.
They're and, people too, John.
And they're these genetically engineered kind of super soldiers, and they're in these giant suits of power armor. Just huge things. And they have these weapons that are just, you know, will just rip through armor and that kind of stuff. They're just these super soldiers. And, you know, again, it's kind of a grim picture of the future, just as the Warhammer world is kind of a grimmer picture of the past. And these Chaos Gods are still present and still influencing things in this game. So it's a little bit, you know, of a different bent on things, but it's the same world, just, you know, far into the future. So there have been lots of games in the Warhammer universe, and there's also been lots of games in the 40K universe too. So for 40K, you have Warhammer 40K, you have the Space Hulk, which we're about to talk about here, RPGs such as Dark Heresy and Rogue Trader, which actually just got released in the last month by Fantasy Flight. There's also some other miniatures games such as Battlefield Gothic, Epic. Battlefield Gothic is actually spaceship battle. Cool. With miniatures. And there's also a PC game called Dawn of War that is based in this world too. So very rich setting. And it's really the basis. Warhammer and Warhammer 40K is really the basis for almost all of Games Workshop's games.
Have I told you my Games Workshop story?
No.
Sorry. I'm like the off-roader.
It's
here.
A special episode.
It's
go
a special
ahead.
Episode.
Yeah. It's Hammer Time.
Kayla and I were dating, and I went up to visit her once, and in that Chicagoland area, they have, in the malls, they have Games Workshop stores.
Oh, okay.
I'd never seen them. It's, think like a game store, but it's just Games Workshop. They own it. They run everything.
That's all they sell?
That's all they sell.
GW stuff.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the store is just called, like, I think just called Games Workshop. So we went in, and we're both gamers, you know, we knew of Warhammer and all that.
Yeah.
And the salesman, he's like, acting like we know nothing about it. He's like, oh, hey, would you like to try Warhammer? It's this game. I'm like, oh, you know, yeah, we play, you know, D&D, we play board games, we know what's going on. Oh, but this is, you get the miniature and then you paint it and then you assemble armies. And I'm like, dude, I got it, you know. And he's like, I can show you if you'd like. And this guy just was not getting it. So,
oh my god,
I thought that was fun. I'd never seen like a dedicated store to that before, and it closed apparently.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. So
now we're gonna talk about Space Hulk, which is actually a board game within that 40K setting. And, you know, I specify that it's a board game because it's not really usable with the 40K. You know?
Right. It's like Descent, Doom.
Yeah, know? Yeah. It's got tiles. It's like kind of a tile-based modular board that can be set up in different ways.
Will you forgive one more aside from me?
No, please go ahead.
This is my last
one. We got all
one.
Night. Go ahead.
Sorry, this is my last one. Of all shows, The Dice Tower recently did like
a fine podcast.
I'm starting to listen now.
it's good.
Turned a quarter. But anyway, yeah. They did like a Descent and Doom thing.
Uh-huh.
I had totally forgotten about Doom.
Yeah. You used to have a copy of it, didn't
Doom
you?
Is better than Descent.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
No, you're wrong.
But anyway, it's like that.
Okay. Well, but thanks Doom. For interjecting your wrongness, and we'll
yeah,
well,
I do what I can. And now the review.
So it's like sort of a self-contained board game here. Now, this thing retails for $99, and so it is chock full of of goodness, I guess. And unlike a game like Descent or Doom, the miniatures that come with this are very similar to Warhammer 40K miniatures in that you're going to need to cut them off the sprues and file them down and glue them together. Actually, I think they do snap together, but I would really highly recommend gluing them just to make sure that they you know, that don't come
apart. The plastic's really hard, brittle, you know.
Yeah, kind of a brittle plastic, so it's not going to be real bendy. So you may even want to find some kind of a foam casing to put them in. I know this company, battlefoam.com, I think they make an actual special foam container that goes inside the box.
Because it's such a cheap game already.
I know.
Well, I guess they figure if you paid $100 for it,
you'll add another 30, yeah, 35 bucks to get it protected. Yeah. And so in this game, what you're going to be doing is you are on a Space Hulk, which is a kind of a giant abandoned spaceship. And you are playing either a squad of Space Marines.
Yay.
Or you're playing a group of these Tyranid race creatures called Gene Stealers.
Ooh.
They're basically like, I mean, they're really similar, kind of like the aliens in the movie Alien.
Oh, yeah. I just, yeah. I knew nothing about 40K. I just played like it was Aliens.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, from the movie.
You could definitely just, you know, yeah. get into that theme and that'd be, yeah. that'd be fine. You don't really have to know that much about 40K to get involved in this.
No.
And so in the game, there's going to be a whole bunch of different missions you can play. There's a mission book that comes with the game, and I think it comes with, 12 or 13 missions, something like that. There are, in fact, 12.
And there's got to be people making them already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure if you go on any number of websites that are 40K based, I'm sure there's
probably on the Geek, too, I bet.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It's been shooting up.
Yep. And this game has gotten so much hype on BoardGameGeek, it's almost kind of silly. I think it's shot up to like number 8 or number 7, and it's made all the Eurogamers very mad.
Well, we wouldn't want that.
All right, so the idea here is that the Space Marines are going to have some kind of a goal that they're going to try to accomplish while they're inside of the Space Hulk here. So the first mission, for example, is you have one of your Space Marines that has a heavy flamer, because all the different Space Marines are different sculptures, and they're going to have different weapons on them. There's one dude who has a big heavy flamethrower thing called a heavy flamer. And the whole point of the mission is that you have to get your Space Marines to one of these rooms and have the heavy flame guy fire the flamer into the room. And there's some flavor that goes along as to why he's doing that. And that's one of the, I think, the benefits of this game is it actually does come with a lot of flavor about why they're on this Space Hulk and the story that goes behind that. So, you know, if you want to skip that, you can skip it and just, you know, play the game. But so that's the whole goal of that one. That seems like that'd be real easy, just march into a room and shoot the flamer. But no, there's some particular challenges that the Space Marines are under.
Stress.
So the Space Marines, I'll tell you a little bit about them. They are pretty slow. And so at the beginning of each turn, each Space Marine gets 4 action points. But they're really slow in plotting. So the Space Marine can move forward a space, and that takes an action point. To move 90 degrees, just a turn, takes an action point. So you can sort of think about these guys in these big lumbering suits of power armor, you know, trying to move around, and they're not going so fast. On the other hand, the Gene Stealers get 6 action points, and they can move real fast. So they can move and turn in the same with 1 action point. So they have a lot more movability and flexibility as far as movement goes. So another thing that the Space Marine player has as a disadvantage is that the Space Marine player's turn is timed, which means you get a sand timer. It's supposed to be about 3 minutes. I'm sure there's threads on BoardGameGeek of people saying, oh, mine is 2 minutes and 47 seconds. Oh, mine's 3 minutes and 15 seconds. It's about 3 minutes.
Just the appearance of the sand timer freaked me out, because I know when we played, I played as the Space Marines. I think the longest I had a turn was a minute.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, oh crap. I'm done. Stop, you know.
And we were doing like the first mission. Some of the later missions where the first mission you only use 5 out of the Space Marines. You get 11 Space Marines in the box. But when you get into the later missions, you actually are using all 11 Space Marines. And so that, you know,
I would have a panic attack.
Oh, I know. Because you get a little bit of analysis paralysis of what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah.
So the Space Marines' turn is timed, and if the timer runs out before they finish all their actions, too bad, that turns over.
Jeez.
The Gene Stealers, on the other hand, they get to take their time.
That's right.
Gene Stealer player can just, you know,
have
a cup of coffee and just take their time, just to show how much, you know, more agile the Gene Stealers are. On the Space Marine side, they have, for example, in the first mission, 5 figures. Once those figures die, they are dead. And so that's it. The Gene Stealers, the box comes with, I think, 22 or 23 Gene Stealer figures, and they're recyclable.
Of course.
So if they die, they just go back in the pool and they can come back on the board. So a lot of things that are not in the Space Marines' favor. But what the Space Marines do have in their favor...
Big guns.
And that's what they're going to use it to their advantage. So I mentioned it takes 1 action point to move forward, but if you step forward, you can fire your gun for free.
Yay.
And so if you are in a corridor and there's a Gene Stealer in front of you, you can step forward and blow his head off, hopefully. And so most of the Space Marines have a weapon called a Storm Bolter. It's like a pistol that shoots these exploding rounds. And so when you fire that, you're going to roll 2 6-sided dice. And, you know, now that I think about it, the 6-sided dice that come in Space Hulk are white and look like they have blood on them. I think I mentioned before with Chaos in the Old World that those...
Those are red,
those
aren't
are
they?
Red dice, yeah. I wouldn't want to get any emails about the...
I believe you're in error on your dice.
The dice color should be white with a... You know, anyway, so so these dice are white and look like they have blood on them. So you can step forward and you're going to throw two d6 for your Storm Bolter. And you're going to hit on a 6 if any of the dice come up as a 6. And so that can be nice.
But that'd be pleasant.
It'd be nice to kill those gene stealers. If you happen to miss and you want to shoot again, you can spend an action point just to stand there and shoot. And if you shoot at something that you missed at the first time, you get what's called a sustained fire bonus, which means that now you're going to hit on a 5+.
Yay.
And so that makes it a little bit easier. So that's kind of what they have going for them. Other weapons that the Space Marines have is they have like a chain sword, and one guy has a power sword, and then one dude has like a thunder hammer, and there's some special rules as to, you know, with re-rolling dice and that kind of stuff. But so those are going to be your Space Marines. So your Gene Stealers basically only have their claws. And but they can claw.
They can be potent.
Yeah, and if you know, the sort of the play in this game is that the Gene Stealers, if they get up on a Space Marine, the Space Marine is probably done.
Yeah,
and so the Space Marines are going to do everything they can to fire their ranged weapons and blow away the Gene Stealers before they get too close. And so on their turn, of course, they're going to do that by stepping forward and, you know, firing down the corridors at the Gene Stealers. Now, when it's not their turn, the Space Marines have another thing in their arsenal known as Overwatch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very important part of the game, is knowing when to go on Overwatch. You can spend 2 action points to put a figure into Overwatch. And what that means is that once they're on Overwatch and then it goes to the Gene Stealer's turn, any time that a Gene Stealer that's in the line of sight of a Space Marine that's on Overwatch, any time that it completes an action and the Space Marine sees it, the Space Marine will shoot it. We'll shoot at the Gene Stealer. Every single time. So if you have a Gene Stealer way down the corridor and it's moving slowly towards you, every time that Gene Stealer moves one space, the Space Marine gets to fire. And then, you know, so especially with that sustained fire bonus where it goes from 6+ to 5+, you have a pretty good shot on 2d6 of killing a Gene Stealer.
Overwatch is your friend. Definitely.
Yeah. But once the Gene Stealer gets up on you, then you're in terrible trouble, because the Gene Stealer is going to roll 3d6 and is going to basically kill you on a 6. You only have 1 hit point basically in this. No. You don't have a lot of wounds. And so that's how that's going to work. So that's sort of the interplay of those things. Now, as far as movement for the Gene Stealers, the Gene Stealers don't just start off on the board. The Space Marines start off on the board in some predetermined location. The Gene Stealers start off not as figures, but as blips. Basically represent kind of like radar blips. The Space Marines know that they're there, but they can't see them, and so they don't really know how many bad guys there are. They just know there's something out there. So you have this big pile of these blips, and at the beginning of the game, depending on the scenario, the Gene Stealers are going to get a certain number of these blips. And then during the Gene Stealer's turn, you have a reinforcement period where you're going to get another some additional blips each turn. I think it's usually 2 for most of the missions. So when you get your blips, the Gene Stealer player is going to pick them up and look at the back of them, and that back will have a number between 1 and 3 to represent that number of Gene Stealer figures. And then you're going to place those blips next to particular entrances. There are these nice little tokens that are purple arrows that actually go next to where the entrance points are. So the Gene Stealer player will put the blips there. And then those blips will move around much like a Gene Stealer does. You get 6 action points for the blip. The blips can open and close doors and things like that. But once the blip gets into the line of sight of a Space Marine, that blip is going to be revealed and is going to turn into that number of Gene Stealers. There are 2 ways that this sort of blip reveal is going to happen.
Blippery.
Blippery. It can be either voluntary, in which... the Gene Stealer player can say, I'm going to just convert this blip, in which case you would just, on their turn, they would turn them over and then convert it to that number of figures and put them on the board. But then that's called a voluntary conversion. On an involuntary conversion, that would be where the Space Marine steps into a corridor and there's a blip there and now he sees it. Then that forces that blip to be revealed, even if the Gene Stealer player didn't want it. So your Space Marine squad is going to also have in it some sort of a leader, some sort of sergeant. And when you have that sergeant, that's going to give you the benefit of some things called command points. And so what the command points will do for you is give you additional action points on your turn or on the Gene Stealer's turn. You basically can spend those on either turn. This can be real, real valuable, and I'll explain why in just a second. But what you're going to do at the beginning of your turn is draw one of these command point tokens out of like a cup. They usually say there's 6 or 7 of them that you get with their. They suggest you put them in a bag or a cup. You're going to draw one of those out, and the Space Marine player is going to look at it, and it'll have a number on it up to 6 command points. Then he's going to give that to the Gene Sealer player face down. And that Gene Sealer player is going to put it on the command point track, which is on this sort of console board that comes with the game, and is going to put that on the zero space. Now, this is an interesting element of the game because it's the Gene Sealer player's job to keep track of the command points.
Mm-hmm.
And basically to keep the Space Marine player honest.
Yep.
So the Space Marine player might say, well, I'm going to use my 4 points to do this with this Space Marine. Oh, and I'm going to use a command point, which will be an additional action point in his turn, to shoot at this Gene Sealer. So then the Gene Stealer player will have to remember that and will then move that command point token one space up. So once that the command points have been used, the Gene Stealer player will keep track of it. And then at the very end of all the turns, after the Space Marine player's turn and the Gene Stealer player's turn, that's going to be revealed. If, for example, that token is on space number 5 on the track, but the token itself says 4 on it, the Space Marine player immediately loses the game.
Yay.
So the Space Marine player cannot use more command points than they have. And I mean, I think it's just, it adds to the tension of the moment too. Yeah.
Because it sounds really easy. Like even when John was teaching me the game, it sounds just so easy. Like, oh, I drew a 3. All I have to do is remember 3. And then you start trying to, you're trying to calculate all your action points, how many points you have left. You got the timer running. There's a couple times where I sold myself short just a little bit just to make sure.
Yeah.
And one thing to note on with the Gene Stealer player keeping the score of things is you're under no obligation to repeat yourself if you're the Space Marine. Like, if you're the Space Marine and you say, clearly, not if you go, I spend a command point.
Right.
But, if I say, I spend a command point and do this, and they don't get it.
Too bad.
They don't get it. I only caught John once with that.
Yeah.
he was on me the other time, but one time I said it, and I kind of looked at him, and he didn't do anything, so I kept moving.
Yeah.
But that's a neat little element.
Yeah. So I mentioned that you can use those command points both on the Space Marine player's turn and on the Gene Stealer player's turn, and here's where that becomes important on the Gene Stealer player's turn, is when you have a Space Marine on Overwatch. So I mentioned before that Overwatch is cool because every time that a Gene Stealer player takes an action that Space Marine can see, he can take a shot. But when you're on Overwatch and you roll those 2d6, if you happen to roll doubles, then your gun jams.
Oh.
And that's not good.
You got a lot of bullets going through there.
That's right. Yeah, you're on the kind of a hair trigger there, so you're just firing. And if your gun jams, then you have to spend an action point to clear that jam. Well, you only have action points on your turn. So if you're on the Gene Stealer player's turn, you're kind of screwed. Unless you have command points, because those command points can be used as action points. So you can spend a command point to unjam your gun, and then you can go back on Overwatch and keep firing. So if you don't have enough command points and your gun jams, then it really puts you at a risk of having the Gene Stealer get to you and possibly kill you. So that's a neat element in the game as well, is the Overwatch thing with those extra command points. One other action that the Space Marine player can take is to put a Space Marine on guard. And what that means is that if a Space Marine is about to have a Gene Stealer right on them, and they might find themselves in close combat, by putting a Space Marine on guard, it will force the Gene Stealer player to re-roll one of their dice. So if a Gene Stealer player is right in close combat, and looking like he might kill the Space Marine, being on guard will sort of give him a last resort to re-roll and possibly survive that. So that is the basics of kind of the combat system and the movement system. And then the rest of it is all just driven by the missions and the specific instructions and goals that are on those missions. So there's lots of different goals and rules. That even comes with two kind of mega characters. There's the mega Space Marine called the Librarian, and there's a mega Gene Stealer called the Broodlord. Really neat sculpts, real cool models. And haven't had a chance to play the missions with those yet, but I'm sure we'll get very far into the book here.
I think so.
So we've already probably forced our hands. So Cody, Space Hulk, buy, try, or deny.
Well, I have to say, I thought this was just going to be Descent in Space.
Yeah.
It just looked very similar and pretty much right, taking out of the box, seeing the components, how these weren't just cardboard You know, cutouts of the different rooms. You know, they're actually embossed with, you know, there's some relief on them.
Oh yeah,
and just seeing the care that's been put into this and the minis. You know, they come unpainted. It's kind of the limit is how much you want to put into it, but they can really look good.
Yeah, there's great, lots of stuff on Board Game Geek of people who have used many different techniques to paint.
Even the
these
unseemly
things.
Dip technique.
Oh yes, yes. But they look really cool when they're painted too.
But what makes this game really different is the fact that you have all of these little things like the command points and, you know, the timer and the Marines being in that stressful situation and the gene stealers or the aliens, you know, just being in that position of somewhat of control and then mm-hmm. the Space Marines just need to survive long enough to get the objective done and they win. It's all of those factors that just made it fun and a definite buy. I would say a buy if you can, because it is it's sold out of its print run, right?
Yeah, and you know, one thing I didn't mention is that it's in some sort of a limited release sort of situation. I don't know how many they printed, but they've said that this is the only printing that they're going to do, and so they've already sold out on the GW. I purchased it as soon as I heard about it from the GW website directly. Mm-hmm. So I think the best place where you might be able to find this would be at your friendly local game store.
Yeah, John told me before we were recording, he's like, yeah, they've got three or four copies at the Game Preserve up in Lafayette, which is just about an hour north of Indianapolis. And I'm like, it's like, I'm a young married couple. It's like, I can afford that crap.
You can always come over to my house.
That's
play.
Right. So if you can get it, definitely buy it. It's a ton of fun. It's better than you might think it is. I thought it was just going to be this simple kind of, you know, modular shooting game, but it's got a lot of charm to it that I think is going to bring it to the table a lot. So a definite buy, a buy if you can from me. So I'll throw it over to John. Space Hulk 3rd Edition, buy, try, or deny.
Oh, I think this is a definite buy, and I bought it, but it's just so well designed. I mean, like Cody said, it seemed like it could just be some sort of a, you know, a shooter like, you know, like Frag or something like that.
God forbid.
But there's such great tension in the game, and there's such a, there's an imbalance, but it's sort of a balanced imbalance. You know, the mm-hmm. Space Marines are slow, but they got big firepower. The Gene Stealers are fast, you know, but they die pretty easily, you know. And so it's definitely a different strategy if you play one way or the other. One great thing about the game is that it's quick, and you can play a game in, you know, 45 minutes maybe.
Sure.
And then if you're having a full game session, set the same mission up again and switch places with your opponent. And, you know, and if you can beat your opponent on the Gene Stealer side and the Space Marine side, well, then, you know,
you're just a better person.
You're just a better person all around. So this is a definite buy for me. I also feel, and I've said this about, you know, game like Arcane Legions as well, is that if you're not a miniatures wargamer, but you're interested in that, I think this is a good threshold or good sort of gateway into the assembling and possibly painting of miniatures.
They just beg to be painted, just the minis. So they're such good quality. I mean, you're going to want to at least try it or dip it if you dare to.
I think they're probably more detailed than 40K miniatures.
I think they're
some of the most detailed miniatures I've ever seen. So great components, a ton of fun, and a little more strategy and tactics than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
So I would give this a definite buy.
Yep. So that's two buys, and I think, at least for me, it's going to be in my top 11 list for next year, I think.
You know what we might do? Let's do top 12 next year.
Oh, really?
Because that'll be even one more than that. So we're just improving, right?
The big 12.
And we'll discuss it. Yeah. So I think that sort of wraps up our special episode entitled Hammer Time.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was hip.
Yeah, so I think it was a good introduction into the Warhammer universe. And, you know, I actually just picked up a copy of the Rogue Trader role-playing game.
You didn't.
I did.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm going to be looking through that and I might run a game of that. I don't know.
Let's go. Let's set it up. You want to do it tomorrow? I'm ready. I'm
sure,
available.
Let's do it. Let's play. But the setting of Warhammer is really interesting.
It's got me wanted to look into it a little more.
Yeah.
Maybe not to buy into the Warhammer 40K stuff,
no.
but I'm interested in the setting. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, so we'd invite you to definitely check that out. If not, when one of the board games we talked about here, you know, maybe go to your local game store and talk to them about you know, some of the stuff that Warhammer has to offer. So I think that's about it for this episode. What do you say?
Absolutely. And remember, we have our Chaos in the Old World contest. We rolled a 9 on the giant chaos die. So if you are the 9th email to send us an email at the Game on Inbox
at gameoninbox@gmail.com
with Chaos in the subject line,
yep,
you could win our copy of Chaos in the Old World. Right. Only played once.
Only played once. Yeah, played it's once. Still fresh. Now, one disclaimer on this is that only one entry per person. So,
absolutely. Yes.
So you can't just send us, you know, 15 emails and, you know, only your first one will count.
Definitely.
Yep.
And feel free to email us about anything else in general. If you have news, reviews, anything you want to share with us, you can also check out our guild on Board Game Geek. We're like number 571. I think
577.
I don't know.
Yeah, just go under guilds and look for us.
Yep.
We're there.
Yep.
And we also would invite you to check out any of the other shows on the Pulp Gamer Media Network. As we mentioned earlier, if you review Pulp Gamer Out of Character on iTunes and any other show, you could get some free copies of the Accent Your Character presentation.
So cool.
Yeah, you know, I just actually listened to the part of the one on Scottish, so I'm
Scottish.
No, I don't want to try to do it on the no. show because people might not like that.
We got yelled at for trying to do British accents.
Yeah, but I'm gonna check that
it's
out.
It's only because I want to have one.
I think my rogue trader might end up being Scottish. So we'll give that a try.
But if you're the GM.
Oh, good point. You want to GM that one?
No. Okay. I want to play it.
All right, well, fine. So we'd also invite you to check out our website at gameonpodcast.com, where we've got some reviews. Cody actually just posted a review of a Hollow Earth Expedition role-playing game, and we've got some other great stuff there, including all of our previous episodes. Also got our great donation button there. We would absolutely. Always invite you to check out that.
The Space Hulk Fund.
The Space
no,
Hulk.
No, I can't. I
no,
can't.
No. Space Hulk Fund for poor Cody. Right? You can still come over here and play it.
Good.
All right, well, join us in 2 weeks where we'll have another great episode of Game On. Lots of great stuff to talk about, as always.
It's going
to
be a big one.
It's going to be a huge one. Yep.
A barrel of fun, you might say.
I would say. So until then.
Game on.
On this episode of Game On,
Hammer Time!
It's like James Brown.
Ha! Yeah, jump back in myself.
Too hot now. Let's try that again.
Nation to nation.
I'm living in America.
All right. Eye to eye.
Station to station. Oh, it's going to be long.
And then Apollo Creed dies.
And then Apollo Creed dies.